song thrush. And that's maple and the gorse. Welcome to spring.
Welcome to the English Florist Podcast. Today, well, we think this is a very timely show, just because it could be a survival guide. Lindsay talks about the cost of living and the prices of cut flowers in a very special episode. Also today, another of your questions from the mailbag, plus there's Flower of the Week. Let's join Lindsay at home.
So, welcome to the English Florist Podcast. We are at the end of March, just about to tip into a very full-on wedding season. Over the last 3 months, I have spoken to lots and lots of florists, florist friends, florist colleagues, florists who come and do one-to-one workshops with me, and also the florists that I've spoken to at the workshops, the group workshops that I've taught. And there is one conversation that comes up time and time again, and it's one that really, really affects me exactly the same as everybody else. So today, this week on the English Florist Podcast, we're going to be talking about the cost of living and the prices of cut flowers, and how on earth do us florists make a living? This week on the English Florist Podcast, I want to talk about the cost of flowers and how on earth do us florists manage to make a living? Because seriously, things are really tough out there at the moment. The beginning of 2023, I've not actually done any weddings. I've been quoting and I've been teaching. I've been arranging flowers for events and funerals and parties and gift bouquets, but I haven't actually arranged any flowers for a wedding yet. But I have done lots and lots of quotes, and I'm quoting for later on this year, 2023, and I'm also quoting for 2024. And in between this, I've spoken to lots of florists, and one of the most common questions that I get asked is, how on earth are you managing to quote for flowers when they just seem to be going up and up and up? And it's a really, really difficult one, because it is quite stressful, particularly when you're predicting for 12 to 18 months in advance. So the way I get around that is I just have an open and honest dialogue with my clients. I explain to them from the get-go the cost of flowers. And one of the situations that we're having at the moment is we are currently in the UK in an economic recession. The cost of living is a real bone of contention. The cost of fuel, be that heating or for transportation, it has a knock-on effect on absolutely everything. And I think sometimes it's very, very hard to convey that over to being a florist. You think, well, how does that affect you? Well, of course it affects us, because obviously we are also trying to earn a living from being florists. Obviously I need a van to run around and deliver my flowers and set up my weddings. And I also, for a lot of people, have studios that they need to heat. Although, to be honest, we often have cool studios. We might have in the summer air conditioning. For myself, I actually work from a studio at my house. And so I'm quite fortunate that my overheads for my business are very minimal, because they sort of come under the umbrella of our house. But for a lot of florists, that's not the case. And so they've got rent, and then they've also got to get to their building, to wherever they're renting their workshop. And then we have to get the flowers in. So when we're actually buying the flowers, most of my wholesalers that deliver to me are now surcharging the actual flower delivery with a fuel charge. And it's only a nominal amount, but if you're having a couple of deliveries a week, it all adds up. And then the actual flowers themselves, well, I mean, every time I look, the cost just keeps going up. And when you have to times that by three times, four times, depending on how you translate your wholesale to a retail price, when you actually add on what you're trying to earn from buying those flowers and make a bouquet, is really, really difficult to actually make a profit. We have to factor in our time. We have to factor in the cost of the flowers, which we're going to obviously have a retail price and we're going to mark up. And we have to factor in the cost of the gift wrapping and bringing those flowers in, choosing those particular blooms. And so very often for me, because I'm not a retail florist, I have a minimum spend for all of those things. But actually the size of the bouquet that I'm making is getting smaller for that entrance level bouquet, which is very, very difficult for customers to understand. One of the reasons why the flowers are going up is, just like here in the UK, over in Europe, where many of our flower growers are growing the flowers that are imported to the UK, they are having to add on for transportation. They are having to potentially heat their glasshouses through the darker months, the cooler months, although many of them are in the south of France and in northern Italy. But occasionally when the temperatures do drop, they are having to heat their large glasshouses. And that costs money. And for some of those growers who have to keep their glasshouses at a particular temperature for more exotic flowers, this is becoming prohibitive. And certainly a lot of flowers went out of business during the pandemic. And so there's a smaller pool to actually buy from. And those flowers are, as I say, some of those companies have actually closed for the winter months. I know that there are certain rose growers that have actually closed down for the winter because they can't afford to, you know, heat the glass houses and then make a profit on top of those because people just aren't going to buy. Other flower growers are actually putting their prices up and translating that to the actual florist who are buying those flowers. Therefore, we have to pass that excess on to our customers. And this is where it gets a little bit difficult, because if you're going to a supermarket and you're putting a bunch of daffodils into your trolley, the likelihood is they're going to be British grown and they are not going to require, they're field grown. But if you're going to buy something like a tulip, they're probably in a UK glasshouse and they will be heated to a certain degree in those cooler months for the tulips particularly, and that all costs money. And we have to pass that on to the customers. Well, with a supermarket, they're buying a vast, vast quantity to sell, to obviously put on the shelves of their supermarkets. But for the smaller florists, the shop florists, the event florists, we have to pass that on. We're buying smaller quantities, and so the cost of those flowers is very often much, much higher than those big bulk supermarket giants. And that's where the difficulty is, because flowers are, at the end of the day, a luxury, and a lot of people do not want to spend copious amounts of money on a luxury when there's a cost of living crisis. When they're trying to put food on the table, one of the first things that is going to leave the shopping basket, one of the first treats that's going to go, are beautiful flowers. People are more likely to treat themselves to a meal, but even that, to be honest, I know lots and lots of restaurants have closed as a result of the cost of living crisis, because people aren't eating out as much. And so all of these hospitality services, and I include floristry within that, within event floristry, are all reining in the costs. And one of the first things that's likely to fall are flowers. Well, obviously, things like funerals are going to continue. People are still going to have birthdays, and flowers are still very much part and parcel of the everyday celebrations of life. But people have less money in their pockets to spend on these things. And this is where it gets really difficult for couples who are getting married, because they are spending out on things like their wedding venue, the food, which have all spiraled out of control. It costs money to heat and, you know, maintain a wedding venue. And then, of course, the food is more expensive, and of course, the flowers are more expensive. And so everything gets cut down in a recession. I was a florist in around 2008, 2009, when there was a recession previously. And I remember dealing with couples who were being made redundant. And it's an incredibly stressful time when you have put down thousands of pounds for a deposit to book a venue, and you have planned to have 100 guests at your wedding, and you have paid deposits to the photographer and to the florist, and then you lose your job. And so I feel particularly mindful that I don't want to take liberties with couples and their best days. You know, these are days which are, they may never throw such an elaborate, expensive party celebration ever again. And it's really important that they don't push their budgets beyond their means. But there's so much pressure these days to kind of comply with trends and what your friends are doing and so on and so forth. And we're all trying to make a living, and we're not, as I sometimes feel, people think we're taking a liberty, but it's like anything really. If you go to a restaurant, there's so much choice. You could go to a McDonald's and have a Happy Meal. You know, you can just buy a bog standard burger, and it's a treat because you've gone out and you've gone shopping and you've grabbed yourself a little snack for your lunch. And you could walk past the market stall and buy a bunch of flowers. And it's quite possible that that market trader may well have chosen the best bargains at the flower market to sell on his market stall. But as an event florist and as a shop florist, we often have more expensive, more luxurious flowers. Then if you factor in things like the effect of Pinterest and fashions and trends for various colours and styles and aesthetics, if you factor all of those things in, when people think about a wedding, for example, and that's my bread and butter, so I'm going to really focus mostly on wedding flowers, for I do feel that people just think, well, they don't know how much flowers are. That's part of the problem. They don't know how much the flowers are. And so for me, as a luxury event florist, I feel I need to set out my stall, and I need to explain to people that if they're going to book me as a wedding florist, that I don't just do a cheap bunch of flowers, and I don't just do part weddings. So I don't just deliver a couple of bouquets for the bride and the bridesmaid and no table flowers because mum's going to DIY it, because actually I can't make a living doing that. And so from the get-go, if somebody reaches out and makes contact with me to discuss their wedding flowers, then I normally send them a little kind of hello, my name's Lynn, this is how I work and this is what I do. And I also give them a guide price as to what I expect a minimum budget to be working with me, because if I don't have that minimum budget, then I don't make any money. And at the end of the day, I'm not a charity, I'm a business, and I also need to make money. I do this for a living. And so I politely explain that at the venues that they are usually booking, and then I'm a preferred supplier, they're likely to have, for example, 6 to 10 or maybe even 12 tables. And they'll want flowers on them. And very often that conversation will be, I've seen this on Pinterest, or these are the things that I really, really want. And so I'm able to quote for those. And if you times those table centers and those bouquets with those particular flowers and those particular varieties of roses, all the things that are on trend at the moment, they cost money. Then I have to factor in the fact that I am also paying a team of florists to work with me, and I need to pay them a reasonable salary that reflects their skills and the fact that they're coming and spending a day with me, and they're going to be driving to me, so it's another cost of living. The fuel to drive to me, I've got to put them in my van and set them up and deliver them, and then I've got to go back the next day and I've got to clear them down, and all of those things are my time, which is money, and the fuel, which is money, and the staffing costs, which also is money, and all of those things have to be factored in to the cost of those flowers. And I really, really genuinely feel so sorry for couples, because why would they have any idea at how much a bouquet or a table center is going to cost? They wouldn't, unless they're actually working in this industry, or they've got friends who have got married, then they have an approximate idea of the costs. But it's very expensive. And very often I'm expecting couples to shop around. So they're going to get a quote from me and they're going to get a quote from a couple of other florists. And some of the things that would factor, they need to factor in when they're choosing their florist is probably the price of the flowers and whether they like that style. And that's where it all gets a bit bleak sometimes as an event florist, when you're offering a really high-end service and a lot of skills and a lot of experience. And my style of floristry particularly is very luxurious. And so I'm pulling in seasonal flowers very often, but I'm importing them when there aren't any grown here in the UK, or they're not available because I can't get them because they're sold out or whatever. But I have to pay for those flowers and I have to make a profit on them. And what I do comes with a skill set and comes with a price tag. And I think it's very, very difficult sometimes for couples to understand that it's just like a meal. You know, when you go out to a restaurant, you choose the type of restaurant you're going for. And so therefore, at the very beginning of the conversation, even before we really have a conversation in person, I'm setting out my stall. I'm telling them how I work and roughly the sort of budget they need to be starting with. And very often I don't actually hear from those couples again. They might just think that minimum spend is way over what they want to spend. And you know what? That's absolutely fine. That's absolutely fine. And I hope that they find a florist that will supply the flowers in the style that they want, in the quantity that they want, for the price that they have. And sometimes I think people are quite shocked at how expensive flowers are. One of the other things that often affects the cost of flowers is things like big events like Mother's Day and Valentine's Day and Easter. These are all occasions where we buy flowers to celebrate that occasion. And so the flowers often, if I'm doing a wedding around Mother's Day or Easter, the cost of the flowers goes up. And I have to factor this in. I have to know in my diary, if I'm quoting a year, 18 months in advance, how much all of these things are going to cost. And I have to kind of add on a surcharge, which I have to explain very often to my couples. Look, it's going to be Mother's Day weekend, and therefore the cost of the flowers is going to be astronomical, because all of those lovely pretty pinks that you love are going to be in demand for mothers all over the UK. And so all of those things I have to factor in and explain to my couples when I'm quoting. I think also the cost of the particular flowers, if you are buying from the Dutch auction, the Dutch auctions and the wholesalers, they supply the whole of the world pretty much. And so our flowers in Holland may be sold in the whole of Europe and the US. And so if there is a trend for a particular flower, the demand for that particular colour or variety will go through the roof. And therefore, the price of those flowers goes up. And so when we're talking something like May and peony season, women love peonies. They love those big, poofy, fluffy, gorgeous flowers. And very often I have to factor in that they are going to be expensive, even though they're in season, they are going to be expensive. And so I have to factor that in. And if it's a cold spring, for example, and they're really late coming on, the demand for them, they might not be in an abundance, the demand for them will go up. And so the price goes up. So there are so many factors when I'm actually physically buying the flowers for a particular wedding date that I don't actually know how much they're going to be until I actually buy them. So I may well have quoted for that wedding 18 months, a year in advance, but I don't know how much they will be until I actually buy them. And so I have to make an educated guess, and I have to, you know, factor in all of those variables when I'm actually making that costing. Because what I don't like to do is to quote for a wedding and then 3 months 2 months ahead of the actual wedding day, re-look at the cost of the flowers and realise I've woefully underquoted and add another couple of £100 on a couple's invoice. It's just simply unacceptable. They will be stretched to the max anyway, or I make that assumption that they have no more wiggle room for flowers. So unless they're actually adding on flowers or specific flowers that I hadn't quoted for, I try wherever possible to keep to pretty much to the quote that I have suggested and I've given them when I originally meet them and I send them their proposal over. But within my terms and conditions, I very often have a clause that says, if you are booking me beyond 6 months in advance, then I have to reserve the right to relook at those quotes. And if the flowers have gone up, which, you know, after Brexit, they went up through the roof, I need to adjust my quote because simply I cannot afford to run a business and make no money and just give the flowers away. I mean, it just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen in food and in retail, and it doesn't happen in floristry. And yet people very often seem to think that, you know, that we can do that, and they can play one florist off against another. And I think that's quite difficult for me as a florist when somebody will say, well, I've got a quote for this much, can you do it for the same? And I have to go back and say, no, there is no wiggle room. I've given you the price that I think my services are worth, and I value my skill set, and I value what I do and the choice of flowers. And I cannot say that that florist is going to be supplying you with the same flowers arranged to the same standards that I am offering you, and so no, I can't. And she might not be VAT, he or she might not be VAT registered. There are so many variables within floristry anyway. It's very difficult to explain to a couple when they've got three or four quotes looking at them on the screen, you know, why is the White Horse Flower Company this much money? But I do think you get what you pay for, generally speaking. And I do know lots of florists who, in order to get the job because they're starting out, will underquote everybody else. I've met florists in my time that have deliberately said, well, whatever that florist is quoting, I will do it for less in order to get the job. And you know what? Do it, because I cannot afford to cut my prices any more than where they are. I'm giving a decent service. I am an experienced florist, and my flowers are always really, really generous. And I explain all of those things when I'm having a consultation, so that people understand that wherever possible, they need to understand that I am the best florist, hopefully, for their job, and they like my style and over and above another florist style. But sometimes it literally does just boil down to the cost of the flowers. And it's really disappointing if you spent several hours costing out a wedding, listing all the things, suggesting things, giving ideas, putting up mood boards, and then all of that you send off to your couple and you never hear from them again. So if there are any couples listening to this podcast, please have the decency and the courtesy to just send a polite response to me and say, thanks, Linz, for the time that you gave to us, that hour Zoom, and the 2.5 hours it took you to pull that quote together and send it over. Thanks, but we've decided to go to another florist. I think that is the minimum courtesy that you owe anyone that has spent a couple of hours of their precious time. If you go to somebody else, absolutely fine. I totally accept it. It's a free market. It's the nature of competition. It is what it is. But just please, I do find that really, really, really grating. When you have spent time and effort and you've had a really good rapport with a couple and then they literally ghost you. Oh, I can't bear it. I absolutely can't bear it. It's so utterly rude. So what is a good price and what is a fair price? Well, how long is a piece of string? It's a really, really difficult one. Recently I quoted a wedding, for a wedding, and I had subsequently learnt that I was the cheapest florist. And I don't think of myself as the cheapest florist, but there were clearly other florists that were charging a lot more than I was, which actually I was quite amazed about, because I think I'm definitely not the cheapest florist, but I wouldn't describe myself as the cheap florist. Anyway, I came home and I said to my husband, "Oh, I just can't believe that they think I'm a cheap florist." I was really indignant about it. And he said, "Well, Linz, think about it. If you think about it in terms of luxury brands, think of a handbag or an article of designer clothing. You know, you can buy, you can walk into a Chanel store or a Mulberry store and buy a beautiful handbag, okay? It's gonna cost you thousands of pounds, several hundred bare minimum, but sometimes, you know, £1,000 or £2,000 for a bag. But you could go to a lovely high-end store and buy one for a couple of £100. Or you could just go down to the market stall and buy a knockoff copy for a couple of quid. And the thing is, you know, what is it worth? It's worth what the customer is prepared to pay. And sometimes a lot of people put a lot of store by spending a vast amount of money on a vast amount of flowers. Generally speaking, my clients aren't those types of clients. My clients generally love flowers, and the flowers are going to be a key part of their day. Very often the sorts of clients that I work with, they are actually paying for their wedding pretty much themselves. Occasionally they might be gifted some money from parents or grandparents, but very often they are budgeting for the venue, for the wedding dress, for the suits, for the honeymoon, for the photographer, and for the flowers. And everything will have a cost, and they will prioritize the important things. And I'm very mindful that flowers aren't always necessarily the top of the list. But generally speaking, for the clients that I get here at the White Horse Flower Company, the flowers are pretty much up there with the most important thing. And so my clients are prepared to spend on beautiful, abundant, luxury flowers. Now, when you're shopping around for florist and for flowers for your wedding, you might not necessarily kind of give some thought to the caliber of the florist or the type of florist. So within that sort of demographic that I generally serve as an event florist, I'm going to get a handful of clients who are just shopping around for the best deal. And you can normally spot where they are with their shopping around, because they'll just ask if I've got any special deals, or if I have any, you know, special offers, or did I know that they're getting married in the midweek, so will it be cheaper for the flowers? Well, no, absolutely not, because I probably have to get the flowers in on the weekend in order to do their Monday or their Tuesday wedding. So therefore I am working the weekend. And so I work 7 days a week, and there is a flat rate for the cost of my time. I don't sort of kind of prioritize over weekends and weekdays. The flowers are what the flowers are, and so they cost what they cost. What you're paying for is my skills, as I say. And so sometimes those people come by, and if I give them that introductory letter and explain who I am and how I work and what I do and what I bring to the table as an experienced event florist, then they can make a decision. And actually, it's perfectly reasonable for them to go, "Thanks, but no thanks. They're not that important to me. I'm looking for a deal. I just need a bunch of flowers to hold as I walk down the aisle." Whereas my clients would be wanting a beautiful, exquisite, luxury, abundant, seasonally inspired, you know, stylish, elegant bridal bouquet. And that is what I deliver. I deliver a personal service, and I deliver a skill set. And you know, the skills, the knowledge, the experience to do that perfect bouquet. And I think that's when you kind of have to sort out your customers, and they will go on, the ones that don't want to spend the money with me will go on and find their florist who will do a deal for them. And there's no judgment on that, because it is horses for courses. As I say, if you liken it to a designer store or a restaurant, there are different increments, and within floristry there are different increments, and so that's absolutely fine. So I'm not affronted, but I think it's really courteous. I think it's important for me to be courteous and explain who I am and what I do, so that my customers can make that choice. So back to the whole nuts and bolts of this conversation about flower prices. It's really, really difficult because most people, when they get married, will want to have flowers. And the thing is, you have to decide as a florist where you stand on that spectrum of flowers and what you do, and whether you're at the beginning of your journey and you're prepared to make less money in order to get the experience under your belt. We've all been there. There is no judgment for that either. Good luck. Fair play to you, I say. I've been there. And then there'll be other people that are, no, what I'm doing, it costs this much money, and I am that one of those people. I am an experienced florist. I know what I'm doing. I charge this amount because the flowers, and only luxury flowers, is what I'm putting into my bouquets. There are no cheap corners. I pay everybody a fair wage, and not a minimum wage, a fair wage that represents their skill set working for me. And so I explain all of this, as I say. So I think if you are a florist and you're struggling, then you have to make a call on whether you just need to get turnover in order to earn an income and put food on your table. That's perfectly reasonable. In this situation, we're in a cost of living crisis. There is a recession. Flowers are expensive. They are luxurious. Is this the right job for you? I don't know. But these are all things that we have to ask ourselves as florists. Can I afford to stay in this job? It's very seasonal if you're an event florist. You know, as I say, I've had no weddings for the first 3 months, but fortunately, I'm able to do other flower arrangements, be it teach workshops or whatever. But for a lot of people, they just want to do weddings. And if there is no work, then you have to make hay whilst the sun shines. So you're going to be doubly busy in the wedding season, which typically runs from spring, sort of end of March, beginning of April, all the way through to October, September, October. And then it slows down a bit, and then there'll be some seasonal stuff around Christmas time. So you have to make hay whilst the sun shines. You have to generate an income, because very often the first few months of the year are often very quiet for us event florists. And I think we just have to weather the storm. And you know, I'm looking at other industries like the hospitality industry and restaurants, and I know so many restaurants and pubs have all closed as a result of the cost of living crisis, the cost of rent, the cost of heating these venues, the cost of the food for chefs, the cost of the staff. There aren't enough staff. And so I don't think floristry is any different to any of those industries. We are having a direct hit, and some of us will not make it through to the other side of this dreadful, dreadful, unfortunate situation, economic situation that we find ourselves in. And if you are one of those florists, you have my sympathy. And if you can stay the course, then good luck, because it is a really tough time at the moment, really tough. Well, hello, and I'm pleased to say that I have ventured further than my kitchen. It's nearly 6 o'clock. Clocks have gone forward, and there is lots more daylight to be enjoyed. And for me personally, I just love to really crack on in the mornings, often in the office doing my admin. And then I like to take Maple out at the end of the day when I feel like I've cleared the decks and I've done the work that I needed to do. And that's happened today, because today we're back in the studio arranging the flowers for our very first wedding of 2023. Now, I know I've been busy, but I haven't actually done a wedding. And it just, oh, I felt slightly disorganised. But it was great to have done the bouquets. I don't know about you, but I always do my bouquets first. I like to have first dibs on all the flowers that come into the studio. So even if I haven't sort of mentally allocated them to a particular arrangement, be that a bouquet or the table centres, I like to get everything up, condition it all. That means cut the stems, to those of you who aren't florists. Strip off some of the leaves so that clean stems, denuded from their leaves, go into buckets of water. And because my flowers that are imported come out of water, they need to have a really good drink. So I put them in buckets of water.
But at the same time, I also then crack on, start doing the flowers. And for me, the first thing I do on my bouquets, and as I say, I like to have first dibs on all the flowers, because sometimes you choose particular varieties of blooms and you think, oh yeah, that'll be fine for the table centres or whatever. And when you unpack them, you think, crikey, they're absolutely beautiful. I think I want to have those for the bouquet. I think they would look better in the bouquet. So that's one of the reasons why I always do my bouquets first. The other reason being is because I'm the most motivated and I have the most energy, creative energy, at this part of the process of arranging wedding flowers. So we were in this morning conditioning the flowers, sorting them all out, and you know what, you may as well just do your bouquets and stick them in a vase of water and give them a nice long drink. As you do, stick them in a bucket of water and give them a nice long drink. So that's what we did. And I think this leads me nicely on to my flower of the week, except it's not really a flower of the week at all. I'd like to talk about the very, very beautiful spring blossoms that we have at the moment. And as I walk here across Greenham Common, oh, there's so much broom. And it's yellow and it's spiky, but it's just coming into colour now. It's like a mustardy yellow. And when it's in full bloom and the sun's on it, it just emits this gorgeous, gorgeous scent. And the bees love it as well. And today we went up my garden, we got the ladder out, and I cut some of the very early contorted willow. It's just got little green shoots. It doesn't actually flower, but it's just new and it's got that lovely kind of almost yellowy green to it in its very, very fresh shoot. So what you can mostly see is just the lovely contorted willow shape, and it's the new growth is really, really lovely and bendy and green and just so elegant. And I think for my flowers, it really lends itself perfectly. But there are so many blossoms at this time of year. And we used to have, but sadly we had to have it cut down, a lovely ornamental cherry. And that has a very, very dark, dark browny red leaf. But the first flower, that first bit of blossom, is pink. And as it opens from this dark red bud into this pretty delicate pink flower, it was just so beautiful and I couldn't get enough of it. So I was, as you can imagine, utterly heartbroken when we had to cut it down, because sadly it was rotting and was risking falling on the cars, amongst other things. Blossom can be catkin, it could be pussy willow, it could be apple blossom, it could be spirea. Oh, I do love a bit of spirea. I have three plants in the garden and the first one is literally teetering on popping open. And this particular blossom, bridal wreath I think it's called, is so incredibly fleeting. Literally, you could have a week of it at best and then it just becomes the lovely green leafy shrub that it is in my garden for the rest of the year. But because I cut it so avidly, it's almost like it gets a really good prune in the spring. So I get lots and lots of new growth from which the little frothy buds arrive. I was just gonna say I've lost my dog. Pop, pop, come on. The dog's crazy. She's been desperate for this walk all day. So blossom is so, so lovely. Things like lilac are blossoms essentially, because of course that there you get the lilac before you get the green leaf on a lilac tree. And of course, if you're buying from Holland, lilac's in season now. It's probably blooms end of April, beginning of May here in the UK, if you're lucky enough to have it in your garden. But there are lots of different. Blackthorn is one of those lovely white frothy ones in the hedgerow. And be careful about foraging for blossom. Do ask the landowner's permission first. But you are allowed to forage a little bit, I should imagine. But I have to say, as a florist, usually driving around in my van, I tend not to. I tend just to pillage what I've got from my own garden. But it really does lend itself and kind of distinguish a spring bouquet. I can just look at my flowers and I know exactly when that bouquet was made. You know, you can date it to the lovely spring flowers that we're using. So yes, I just wanted to big up the blossom at this time of year. It really is so beautiful. And as I say, it just lends itself and gives it that a real delicateness to our arrangements. I wanted to also talk about, go back to the conversation about the cost of flowers. It was certainly something Fee and I were talking at length about today in the studio. And we just feel like sometimes it's best to have not necessarily like a code of what everyone should be charging, because at the end of the day, competition is competition. But sometimes if you're actually communicating with couples, it's really, really important that we do give them some indication of prices of flowers, or maybe, you know, if they just want bouquets and buttonholes, give them some idea of how much that's likely to cost if you are a florist, just to give them a heads up, rather than that awful situation when you sent them over the quote and they just had no idea. And as I say, I do have utmost sympathy for those customers who are getting married, and why should they know about flowers? So that's why, for me personally, I like to just send out a little PDF ahead of any sort of Zoom consultation, just to give them some idea of what I'm charging as a florist and why I'm charging that, but also explain a little bit about the cost of flowers. And you do get for what you pay for at the end of the day. And I certainly know that a lot of florists on social media are busy putting out on their platforms, on their grid posts, some sort of indication of what to expect to pay for wedding flowers. And I appreciate that it does vary from region to region. And the sort of florist that you are and the sorts of flowers that you do and your experience. But just give our poor couples some idea so that they can get their head round and maybe allocate a bigger section of their spending, wedding spend, on flowers if they think they're worth it. And you know what? Like I say, not everybody does. And, you know, I respect that too. There's a florist out there for everyone. That's the thing. And a little bit of open, honest dialogue, I think, is really, really important. Yeah. That's all I wanted to say on that. And if you do have any more information or any more suggestions or any comments about the cost of flowers at the moment, please do message me either at Lynn's, at the White Horse Flower, or perhaps you can direct message me or send me an email. Over on my Patreon page, I'm going to be doing a talk soon about stem counting and how to work out how many flowers you actually need, because I think it's a really, really difficult one when you're starting out. And I think the way I do it isn't necessarily a way for everybody, as I say, particularly if you're not experienced at buying flowers. There's a real danger you either have the disaster of underbuying, or more likely that you overbuy and therefore don't make enough money, and potentially waste money because you've got too many flowers for the job in hand. So that's on my Patreon website for those subscribers on tiers 2 and 3. So I do hope you listen in, or feel free to join us sometime in the next couple of weeks. The question this week has literally just arrived on my WhatsApp from a florist that I mentor, and she has just messaged me and asked me whether I may cut my flowers in advance, because she's got a job in town and she's thinking that she's going to have to take all her flowers and arrange the arrangements in situ. So I've just reassured her actually to say that I don't. I pretty much make up all of my arrangements, with the exception of something like a large installation, which obviously I have to bring the buckets and the wherewithal and build it in situ, because it simply wouldn't fit in my van. Things like pedestals, again, you do run the risk, if you make them up in advance, of them A, either falling over, B, if you don't have a van and you're getting them in a car, that they're not going to go in, and most importantly, you're most likely to damage or break the stems, which is really annoying, because do you know how much a lovely Persicaria fritillaria is at the moment? I mean, it's about £4, and I think I think I would cry if I broke one of those ahead of the game. So I pack the big installation flowers and the big pedestals into Dutch buckets with collars to protect the stems from being knocked. But everything else from my bouquets, as I said earlier, my bouquets I am making up 3 days in advance of the wedding. And when I'm teaching, lots of people comment on that and ask me, you know, what happens if a flower dies in that time? And I always chuckle and say, well, I pull it out, of course, and I can always go and replace it with another flower from another arrangement. For me, the most important arrangement is the bridal bouquet. And so, as I said earlier, I really like to have first dibs on everything before I allocate those flowers to other arrangements. I like just to make that show-stopping bouquet the best of the bunch by a country mile. But I also made up today all of the table centres, and I have got a Saturday wedding, and I have to say it is Thursday and all the table centres have been made already. So I think it's really important that I spend my time wisely. Tomorrow I'm making buttonholes, but even those can be made up a couple of days in advance if you're wiring them and then you put them in the fridge. So that's a really nice top tip right there. Yeah, table centres always make up plenty of time. Then you just need good packaging to get them into crates. If you've got vessels with water in that may slop around, make sure you've got lots of towels or something at the bottom of the crate that will absorb any stoppage. And do bring a little watering can with you as well, so that you can top them up when you get there. So yes, I would say about 90% of my arrangements arrive at a wedding venue on the day, made up ahead in the previous 2 days, I would say. And that can vary according to the temperature and things like that. So if it's super, super hot, then I try and do those things. I try and get the flowers in as late as possible. And then we're working at lightning speed to make them up, keep them cool in the shade, and then transport them to the venue made up. And if anything goes over, you just pull it out. I mean, we are working with a perishable commodity here, and things do go over. It's a fact of life. So yeah, that's what I do. I hope the lovely lady who messaged me, I've already replied to her already, but I hope if that anyone is wondering what we do, or what I do, that's what I do. When I trained as a florist, we used to very often take the flowers with us and make them up in situ. But these days, there are so many venues and it's one in, one out. And so very often we have a time allocation to come in, say 10 o'clock. We might have a couple of hours to actually make our installations, be they hanging up or from the ground upwards. We have to unload the van. We have to get all of those arrangements out and get them onto the tables. And we've got candles and tea lights and all sorts of things to set out to, as well as see the bride and deliver the buttonholes and all of those bouquets. So there's quite a lot to do in usually quite a short period of time. So the more you have done in advance, you can spend more time in those preceding days and it's slightly less stressful. In fact, it's a lot less stressful in my opinion. So yeah, hope that helps everyone. And I'm hoping you're enjoying the new time of the new podcast on a Monday. And thanks for listening. And I will speak to you very, very soon.
Lindsay is back in 2 weeks, and if you'd like to have a question answered in the mailbag part of the show, write to Linz via Instagram at The White Horse Flower. On our Patreon channel, right now you can hear extra snippings, which is linked to in your podcast player app, or through the White Horse Flower website. Exclusive days in the life of a florist. The extra snippings shows are only available on Patreon, and today you're invited to spend time behind the scenes with Linz as she shares some prompts that she's been writing and recording in a series called Meet the Maker, where she discusses starting and maintaining a flourishing business. Music is from artlist.io, licensed and used with permission by the producer.